Hi, this is James Devine, and I am an educator who has come out of the trenches. Listen in as my friend and colleague Dana Goodyear shares stories and tips from other educators who have come out of the trenches.
Welcome to the Out of the Trenches podcast. This is Dana Goodyear. Thanks for listening. My next guest is Yaritza Viljaba. She has 10 years of experience in education. She started her career teaching social studies to high school students in Bedford, Brooklyn, New York. She has also developed numerous curriculum materials and conducted a variety of professional developments. She is currently a lead teacher of an alternative high school in Bedford in New York City. She's teaching overaged and undercredited students history through a critical lens. Her overall mission in education is to provide teachers and students with an array of strategies and materials to assist them in the educational process. Welcome to the podcast, Yaritza.
Hey, I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, tell me a little bit about a time when you were in the trenches, because I know you help a lot of students who, you know, have been there, you know, and you're helping them kind of get out of the trenches. But are you using a lot of your own experience from being in the trenches to work with your students?
So I'm actually still in the trenches. I know that on social media and even with speaking to some of my colleagues, you know, they always state, we're all a first year teacher. Yeah. I hate that line. I'm not a first year teacher because I feel like, you know, as a first year teacher, I knew nothing about teaching. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I know enough to realize that it's time to adapt to changes. Mm-hmm. But I believe that, you know, my experience with teaching came a lot about, well, it is what it is because of how I was raised, but also my experience in school itself. I always tell people that, you know, I am an L. My first language is Spanish. Mm-hmm. And just being able to sit in different classes because people assumed that I didn't know things. It's kind of similar to what teachers are dealing with now. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of folks are making decisions and laws without actually asking teachers what's best for them and what's best for students. So I would definitely say that I'm in the trenches, and I was definitely in the trenches when I founded YV Educational Resources.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit about your experience as an ELL student when you were middle school and high school, and you know, did you have teachers that supported you in that language learning process, or how was it for you being, you know, immersed in the English setting and maybe not getting support in some of your classes versus getting more in other classes?
So believe it or not, I started elementary school in an L class. I had a teacher who, I believe she was my teacher from like first to fifth grade, mm-hmm. in a sense that I was seeing her like daily. And she would teach me different things that were, you know, the English language. Mm-hmm. But what was so funny was I knew English. I came to America when I was 3 years old. So it was almost like, hey, how you doing? I'm here. I exist. I don't really need this text. Can you please provide me with something else? Yeah. Junior high school, I didn't receive any services. But then in high school, they placed me in what's called native, which was very different from your normal L classroom. Usually, mm-hmm. the goal is to teach you English, to teach you different things about, you know, the culture in the United States. And my experience was totally different. I had a teacher by the name of Senora Gaetan. I still remember her name till this day because I had her for all 4 years. Mm-hmm. We were in a classroom with only Spanish speaking students.
Okay.
And we only spoke Spanish, which I found it to be like, you know, so out of this world, because here you have it. I'm one of probably 20 students, mm-hmm. But I'm probably the only one who has lived in the United States for so long. Mm-hmm. And no one was teaching these students English. And so it's very similar to, I believe, my students who are overage and undercredited. Mm-hmm. They're asking for more. They're asking for the resources. They're asking to be challenged. But because so many folks are making assumptions about, you know, how students learn best, we're not meeting students where they are, which is why I say I'm still in the trenches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So did you, was kind of that experience that you had as an L student cause you to want to go into education and be able to provide those students with more than maybe you feel like you were receiving as a student yourself?
Oh, for sure. So when my family first migrated here to America, you know, my mom had four jobs. Mm-hmm. And so the task of making sure that me and, well, my brother and I had finished our work and we were ready to eat mm-hmm. dinner was placed on my sister. Mm-hmm. And so one game that her and I would always play was school. Mm-hmm. And she would just always teach me different things, but also it was almost like homework help. Mm-hmm. And then with being in the L classroom, because I knew that I was dominant in the English language, I was speaking to other students in English, or we would play around and I'm cracking jokes. And because they didn't know, it was more like, oh, you have to learn this word. So I believe just that experience of, you know, growing up, knowing two languages, but also having a teacher at home, because that's exactly what my sister was, and being able to teach others while I was in high school equipped me for being a teacher after college.
And when you first started teaching, maybe in your student teaching experience and your first assignment as a teacher, were you looking for schools that had students that were maybe missing credits, a lot like the students that you currently teach, or have you had experience teaching in other sorts of classrooms?
So I never did student teaching. Okay. What happened was I went to my old high school. I went to actually visit my mentor, and having a conversation with him, I had told him, like, you know, I'm doing my master's in education, and I had just started. That was the same month I had just started my master's program. And he said, okay, well, come back on Friday. And I was like, for what? And he was like, because I want you to meet the principal. Okay. Little did I know that Friday was actually my job interview. I got hired, and I started that following Monday as a teacher. So I skipped student teaching. By the time I finished my master's, I was already in my second year of teaching. And actually, I did teach students who were overage and undercredited. Mm-hmm. But we taught them very different. We taught them skills that would actually work today with remote mm-hmm. learning. So gym was not in the school building. We actually took them to YMCAs. Mm-hmm. They did foreign language class using Rosetta Stone. Mm-hmm. So we were already equipping students with, you know, skill-based learning and helping them actually even get jobs before remote learning began. And this mm-hmm. was what I've been teaching 11 years. So this was more than 9 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so I believe my experience, even just going back to my high school where I had just recently graduated from a few years ago, what was so shocking was some of the students that I knew from high school, meaning I was in a classroom class with, mm-hmm. were seniors still. They were mm-hmm. overage seniors. And guess who was the teacher? Mm. Me. So it made it weird. But then again, I believe that that's what, you know, motivated them to want to just hurry up and graduate and get out. And mm-hmm. that's usually what happens with my students as well. Like when I share my experiences or what I'm doing now, students are like, oh, well, I could do that too. And I'm like, of course you can. Mm-hmm. So just even being able to relate to students on that level of course, anything is possible. You never know who has their eyes on you. You never know, you know, what's planned for you unless you give yourself, you know, a chance. I believe that's what makes everything possible.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you as a social studies teacher right now with just all the cultural relevant pedagogy and, you know, a lot of what's been going on in the country over the past 6 months, what kind of discussions do you have with your students, and how has it maybe shifted now that you are in a hybrid or you've been online? I think you said you were opening up now in October a little bit. Mm-hmm. How do those discussions go, especially when you're kind of on that, you know, Zoom call or the Google Meet and everybody is trying to speak and people are muted? How does that go? And is everybody able to say their piece?
Yeah. So I've always had real, and I'm going to put real in quotes, mm-hmm. Real relationships with students. So I look at students as, you know, I'm not an expert. We're both students, yeah. Which means I'm not going to be perfect, and nor do I expect you to be perfect. Yeah. So when we are on Google Meets. We use Google Meets. So when we are on Google Meets for live instruction, I'm always asking them to ask questions. Tell me how you're feeling. And if the conversation goes off the wall and they're telling me about what happened last night or what happened Saturday, it doesn't matter because I'm still engaging students in conversation. For me, all that matters is that my students are safe. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means academics means nothing. My students have been through so much in life. And I have students who have been impacted by COVID. You know, I have students who are impoverished. I have students who live in shelters. I have students who use drugs, who have been in jail. So their experiences are very different from your average student. Mm-hmm. They have already experienced what some adults would never experience in their lifetime. And so just being able to have realistic conversations about, you know, what's your next move, or, okay, you weren't able to do the assignments because you were probably in jail, or you had to babysit. So now what's our next steps? I've learned to push aside academics and worry more about the social and emotional learning aspect. Mm-hmm. And then with culturally responsive teaching, that is what I do. Every day it's how do I create something that's going to benefit my students in the long run? Mm-hmm. So I follow my own curriculum. I've always made my own curriculum. I've always designed my own interactive notebooks. We don't use textbooks in my classroom. We never have. And a big part of that is because I need to meet my students where I am, mm-hmm. well, where they are, sorry. And textbooks don't do it. Mm-hmm. So with hybrid learning, yes. So we went face-to-face last week. Mm-hmm. And believe it or not, I only had one student come in face-to-face.
Oh, wow.
So what we realized as a school was when students did not sign up for remote, we believe that it was because they knew that New York kept pushing back mm-hmm. the start date. And so now we have it where a lot more kids have signed up for remote. I guess now that they understand that they have to actually come inside the building, mm-hmm. They don't want to do it, which mm-hmm. is perfectly fine because most of my students work during the morning and during the day anyway, which means they're doing my work in the middle of the night. I still receive messages at 11:30 or 2 o'clock in the morning saying, hey, Ms. V, I need you mm-hmm. to unlock this, or can you explain this? So it works. I believe that by next month, all of my students will be remote.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that, you know, works a lot better also, as you said, with their schedules and you're getting those credits. And are you teaching several students, if you teach different sections of history? So do you have some students who are in several of your classes, maybe because they need the U.S. history and the world history?
Yeah, so I only teach U.S. history, but I teach U.S. history 1-2, AP 1-2.
Okay.
So I'm the only U.S. history teacher in my entire school. Mm-hmm. So if you need U.S. history, you've been in my class. if you've, because we do take mandated state exams. So if you've passed the regions, but you need a credit, you'll still be in my class. Mm-hmm. If you need an advanced placement exam, guess what? You're still in my class. Yeah. So I've had students who've had me twice, which I do now. They have me for like US 1 and AP 2 or something like that. So I'll see them twice a day, or I may just see them once face-to-face and the other time just virtual, which means I don't have them really do live instruction mm-hmm. if I already address something in class. Okay. But it's a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. But you feel like just kind of getting back into the virtual teaching, you're able to continue those relationships with students that maybe you had a few of them last year, but also building the relationships with the kids that you started with this year. It's not been too much of a hurdle in the online environment.
Oh, no. And, you know, building relationships is important. And I always, you know, mention that to folks. So even before remote learning, mm-hmm. I designed a flipped classroom just to meet the needs of my students, because attendance is always an issue with overreach undercredited students. You know, like I mentioned, they work during the day, and that's usually the time that we actually have classes. Yeah. And so I would have to use Google Classroom almost like a second classroom for my students. That way, all right, you didn't make it face-to-face, but you're still able to access the work online. Yeah. So most of my students who probably had me last year or the last semester before summer school, they already knew like what the expectations are, how we're gonna do live instruction, how to work Google Classroom, but also I'm known for doing how-to videos. Mm-hmm. So if I can't answer a question during the day, you could just click on a video at night when you're working independently, and you'll still be able to receive the content, or you'll still be able to receive explanations for questions that I know you may have.
So since you've been teaching that content for a while now, you kind of, you can anticipate what kind of questions students will have.
That's
great to have that there, so they're able to access and, you know what to do. And, you know, as you said, having that prepared and having been using that type of model for a while, so kids can work on their own to accommodate their schedules. It doesn't really, it's not so much difference for you now with the remote teaching model. So that leads us a little bit into your educational resource company and how you got started with YB Educational Resources and kind of what led you into, you know, putting the materials online and helping teachers out through sharing of resources.
So I founded YB Educational Resources about 2 or 3 years ago, and I wouldn't say it was by mistake. It was just more of, I never assumed or never thought that I would have a nonprofit. But we were buying into another program. I don't want to mention it, but I felt like the program didn't meet the needs of my students. Okay. So what I would do is I would take whatever materials they gave us and I would just redesign it to meet the needs of every single student in my class. Okay. And what that meant was if you gave a rubric and I didn't feel like it was holistic, I would recreate it. Or I would recreate it in a way where students could actually use it to assess themselves. The vocabulary wasn't meeting the needs of my students. It wasn't in different languages. It didn't have like a word bank. And these are things that my students need the most. I have students who, if you put something there and it's 10 different vocabulary terms that they've never seen before, then they may get frustrated. And so what I did was I redesigned a few of the resources and I reached out to the program and I ended up, you know, meeting one-on-one with the woman who was responsible for the program. And at first she loved my ideas. She actually wanted to work with me. And then about a few weeks later, I received an email basically stating, you know, she loved the ideas, but she wouldn't, you know, partner with me, but she wanted to still use my resources. Obviously that became an issue. Because I felt like what I designed was to help everyone out. And she wanted to make money off of whatever I designed. And so that's why I created a nonprofit. I believe that teachers deserve to get the resources that they need without having to pay $500, $800 for a webinar that's only 2 days or 1 day and get a binder. Where the binder doesn't meet the needs of every student. It's not, you know, multiple entry points for learning. So when I created YB Educational Resources, it was just that. It was, how can I continue to create resources that's going to help students all over the world and not charge teachers for it?
So do you focus mostly on students, you know, who are in high school or middle school and social studies, or are the resources for multiple grade levels and multiple subject areas?
So the resources are actually for multiple grade levels and areas. You know, we talked about, well, prior to remote learning, I did do writing workshops. And what I would do is, say for instance, I created a strategy and it was like a diary strategy. I would learn ways that I could infuse it in science, math, history, and phys ed. And so every strategy that I create, I always try to see how I can implement it in a different subject area, but also how can I take away some activities and, you know, recreate some for like the lower grade levels. So a lot of the activities on YB Educational Resources can be used cross-curricular, but also throughout different grade levels. And I've actually had even elementary school teachers use some of my strategies because the projects are culturally responsive projects. So it's aligned with not only our communities, but also the times, you know, it's current events. These are things that kids need to be privy to.
So have you also been leading some Twitter chats and, you know, I was going to ask you a little bit about, you have the Teacher Success Summit happening October 19th through 23rd. So is this a new summit that you haven't put together before? And how did you get all the planning in place? And are you working with other educators on this?
So it's actually not my summit. I was asked a few months ago by Chuck, who's responsible for the Teacher Success Summit, if I would present on parent engagement. He followed me on Twitter and, you know, I guess I stood out And he asked me if I would be willing to share my strategies and resources with teachers from around the world. Mm-hmm. And of course, I said yes, because that's my true belief. And so what we did was I created a presentation for teachers, mm-hmm. and then they'll get like even a surprise bonus. I won't tell you what the bonus is, just in case people listen to this before. But they also get a surprise bonus. He's done this before, so it's not the first of its kind. He has done it. But what I love about it, it's over 100 educators. Mm-hmm. And for more than 4 days, you can sit there and on your own time, you can pick and choose what kind of workshops you want to sit through. And then if you feel like, you know, well, maybe whatever Yuritsa said with parent engagement, I may want to use this later on in the year. Mm-hmm. Before it expires, you can actually just get a membership to the Teacher Success Summit and you'll have it for the entire year. Mm-hmm. And that goes along with every presentation. So I believe that Chuck did, it's a great idea. Also because it's allowing teachers to have access to strategies and pedagogy right at their fingertips. You know, sometimes some of the best workshops, like I feel, is like while I'm at work. Mm-hmm. So while I'm teaching, I feel like someone else is doing a workshop that I may need help in. What's so great about the Teacher Success Summit is you can view it on your own time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this is then, are they doing some live sessions then during October 19th through 23rd? And then is it available for a certain time for free? And then you pay the membership to access whenever?
Yep, it's available from October 19th to the 23rd. And you can access it for free. And then after the 23rd, you can pay for the membership if you want access to all of the videos. Okay. So I know my session isn't live because I'll be teaching. So what I did was I pre-recorded my session. But I do believe some folks are doing it live, but mostly everyone, I believe perhaps recorded their sessions.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your business model with YB Educational Resources and you know, how you were maybe serving the clientele prior to the pandemic. And, you know, what kind of resources they were looking for as opposed to afterwards. We talked a little bit in the pre-chat about you didn't do any virtual workshops prior to the pandemic and that you were going to create a local library group. And tell me a little bit about what the library group is looking like now and what you're planning on doing locally.
So prior to the pandemic, I wanted to create relationships with the Brooklyn Public Library. So I wanted to remind people that we still had resources at our fingertips, and they were actually on the corner of mostly every block here in Bedford-Stuyvesant, Brooklyn. My neighborhood library is Macon Library. And so when I did my first teacher's writing workshop, I wanted to do it directly in the library because I wanted to show people, hey, this is still open. Mm-hmm. It still has books. It has up-to-date computers. You know, some folks still don't believe in library cards, but I still believe in it. Mm-hmm. And this is a good way for you to see, you know, the differences that it makes when you take kids out of one environment and place them in the next where they can be more comfortable with learning. Mm-hmm. So I did the writing workshop there. And then it was in hopes of constantly moving around and shifting where the workshops would be, but all in libraries. Mm-hmm. So once everything opens up in New York, I'm still going to use the Brooklyn Public Libraries, mm-hmm. because for me, this is our community and everything that I do is about how can I benefit the children of Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
So with those partnerships, basically what I would do is, you know, I would sign a form. I would let them know when I needed the workshops. I will let them know that I'm providing breakfast and everything else, and they could actually attend the workshops as well. Mm-hmm. So we had it where even the staff from the library attended the writing workshops. The writing workshops were designed for parents and for teachers. Mm-hmm. And I did different strategies with how you get kids to be engaged in writing. And that was across the curricula. So it was in math, it was in science, it was in physical education, and mostly, you know, shining a light that students can write in every subject area as long as we create activities that are engaging enough to make them want to write.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So that was the workshop that I had done before. And you mentioned, you know, how remote learning shifted that approach. It definitely did. I never did any virtual workshops prior to remote learning. But on Twitter, at one point I noticed a lot of teachers were needing assistance and they needed help. And, you know, sometimes you look on your timeline and you're just like, oh, this looks negative, negative, negative. And I took it as, all right, Yuritsa, you have the platform to be able to help. So how are you going to help? And so I first posted a question and I said, if I offered a 3-series workshop, how many of you would come? And people were like, oh, put me in there. I want to do it. And then I tweeted out again and I said, I want to do a workshop focusing on how to engage students using Flipgrid. Mm-hmm. And people were like, let me know the dates, let me know the dates, let me know the dates. So I was just like, okay, now I have to step back and plan it. And so I was like, okay, what are the 3 areas that people need the most? Teachers need to know about SEL, student mm-hmm. engagement, and of course, parent engagement. And then I had to think about, when do I want to offer this? I felt like parent engagement needs to be offered in September because that's right when school typically starts, especially here in New York. Mm-hmm. While, you know, student engagement could be in August, and then SEL, which is for me the most important because it's for every subject area and it should be done daily, has to be first. Mm-hmm. And then because I focused on Flipgrid, I said, oh, I could just add one more thing. Let me put the cherry on top of this and let me make it culturally responsive teaching. Mm-hmm. What I didn't realize was we would have so many teachers sign up. I just thought, okay, here's a few of my friends who are saying they want this. So once we noticed, and they were free workshops. Mm-hmm. And once we noticed that, I believe with the first workshop, we had over 175 people sign up. Wow. I reached out to Flipgrid. I reached out to Pear Deck. I reached out to Wakelet. And those organizations, I asked them to actually donate swag. And so what I did was I gave away YV Educational Resources swag. So we got like notebooks, we got stickers, we got pens, shirts, hats, teddy bears. I have to send you some swag. And I mixed that in with the swag from Flipgrid and Wakelet and Pear Deck and sent those out to people. So I would even do gift giveaways and surprise giveaways. And then for the next, I started to think about how much students don't have devices. Mm-hmm. And then just the notion of, if I give you a device and I expect you to just know everything about it, am I truly being authentic and realistic with my approach? Mm-hmm. And my answer was no. And it was no because I felt like when remote learning first began, we assumed as educators that because students use their cell phones to, you know, get on Facebook or Instagram, we assumed that they knew how to upload documents and upload videos. And so I took a step back and I figured out, okay, let's start an initiative. And so that's how I came about with the Tech for All initiative. And we're still raising money for that in hopes of giving away 50 Microsoft Surface Pros for students in the neighborhood. And also that's followed by 6 weeks of training. So I've had some ed tech folks from Twitter, because that's where I meet everybody, actually do how-to videos in different languages for students. And it'll expose them to knowing how to really use the Surface Pros, but also it will be homework help as well. So if a student can't make it on a Saturday, I'm actually going to make myself available every Tuesday at the public library to help after school.
Yeah, no, that's so great that you're able to partner with these, just these different professionals who are able to help out with these workshops, helping out with these Twitter chats, providing you with the swag, you know, getting people involved, kind of, you know, starting small, but then reaching out and then grabbing, you know, anybody who's willing to help out and help, you know, providing things for students. So, you know, this kind of, it's really grown over the past several months, correct?
Yeah, it's gotten huge. And I don't know, can you see this picture behind me? Mm-hmm. You see it at Yuritsa? So that's actually a Flipgrid new series. Surprise. So I have my own show now with Flipgrid. It's called At Yuritsa, and it's culturally responsive teaching. Every Monday I go live on YouTube. I answer questions from teachers all around the world that are submitted through the forum. And every Friday I post a blog, basically giving them, you know, extra information. Okay, so on Monday's show, I talked about these 3 activities. This is how you can implement it. So this is new now. Yesterday was actually episode 2. So surprise.
So what time of day Eastern would that be on Tuesdays?
So on Mondays, it's every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern time. It's at Yuritsa, it's live. And then every Friday we post the blog. So before noon Eastern time, you'll see the blog post. We usually post it on Twitter to share it. But if you go on a Flipgrid website and you press blog and you hit on @Yuritsa, it's right there.
Okay. Well, that's great to add to the show notes so the listeners can access that and, access your YouTube videos and your blog as well. So what kind of remote learning resources do you provide people who jump on your website? And do people have to be a member to access the resources? Is there any type of fee?
So there's two ways. So when we first designed YV Educational Resources, there was no fee. Mm-hmm. And it's still partly no fee. So you don't have to be a member to be on a website. I have a free Google Classroom that has every single resource I've ever created. And it still continues to be that. And then we created a site membership for folks who want to do like one-on-one talks with me, mm-hmm. or who, want to do some kind of like chat, want to post things to my forum. We created that differently because we realized that there were some folks who they were in my, DM, or they were sending me emails and it was just like, can you help me one-on-one? Mm-hmm. And at one point I realized I'm saying yes to everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I'm pulling away from what I really wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so I decided to just separate it, but they still have access to every single resource. The membership is for now if you want one-on-one assistance. Mm-hmm. And you literally through that membership page, it'll give you a calendar and you click on not only if you want like one-on-one help, mm-hmm. If you want me to do curriculum planning with you, if you want Zoom meetings, if you want to chat, you pick it, you add it to the calendar, and then I get a notification.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of just, walking teachers through how to use the resources, giving them some ideas on their lesson planning and kind of coaching them through maybe a tool that they haven't used before.
Right. That's exactly what it is. Okay. So because like I noticed, it's one thing to create and to share. I'm a firm believer of I can show you better than I can tell you, because mm-hmm. for educators, sometimes we sit through professional development and we hear folks say, I had 99% passer rate on this, or this worked, trust me. And I'm sorry, I can't trust everybody. So I'd rather you show me something. And then that way, from my understanding, I could either tweak it for my kids or just say this will work perfectly, mm-hmm. as opposed to saying this is just one way that you should teach something. So those one-on-one sessions with members actually helps, because now I get to know who your students are and now we can tweak it together. So you may have a question about a resource that I created, but you feel like it won't align with your learners. With that one-on-one session, now I'm sitting down with you and I'm saying, okay, let's take this out, but let's put this activity in. So mm-hmm. it actually works. Yep.
Mm-hmm. You also have a hashtag Rethink Learning chat that took place in August. Is that also going to be an ongoing chat, or was that a one-time event?
So that wasn't my chat. I was a featured host. Okay. Most of the things on Twitter, I say yes to like everything. Barbara Bray, she's the bomb. She had asked me, could I be a guest host? Okay. And once she said I could ask my own questions, I said, oh, for sure. Okay. That I actually did it once, but we're gearing up to do a podcast as well, a podcast interview with Next Steps. So you'll see me on Twitter, especially if you follow me. We have a whole bunch of chats coming up. I've agreed to like a whole bunch of Twitter chats. I have to look through my planner to know which one is next. But I'm always saying yes, because I feel like, even if I could just say two lines or five sentences or ask 10 questions, I'm helping someone.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I just wanted to go back a little bit to when we talked in the pre-chat, you talked a little bit about how when you were starting out as a teacher, you were a peer collaborative teacher, but it was difficult for you to make the connections. And, maybe when you were starting out, you had to do a lot of it on your own. So did that kind of lead you to, wanting to help the teachers, maybe because you had to find a lot of the materials yourself, and now you want to kind of give others what you've been able to create?
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
I feel like, and I'm human, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like sometimes when people know that you work hard or you're very like innovative, mm-hmm. it's like they just expect for you to just create. Mm-hmm. And when I first became a peer collaborative teacher, I was already collaborating with teachers prior to that. So the collaboration part was the easy part. Mm-hmm. Knowing who to collaborate with, mm-hmm. Not feeling, you know, a type of way if someone didn't want to collaborate was what I struggled with the most. Mm-hmm. Because I felt like, hey, I created something so awesome and it works and the kids are loving it and you have the same kids, so I think you should try it. What I realized was not everyone is the same. And the teachers where I worked didn't really take me serious. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that also dealt with, one, I'm almost one of the youngest there. And two, it's almost like, why would I listen to her if they've paid someone else $800 to give us this PD? So I was also struggling with that. So making connections with teachers was something that I had always struggled with. But it was so crazy because once I started connecting with teachers around the world, I realized that it wasn't really that I struggled with making connections. Mm-hmm. It was just some folks didn't want to connect. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, from the last time you and I spoke, I met so many cool people and I've had, you know, so many different sessions. Even last week, I was just on another session with some folks and I'm just learning, you know, how to embrace everything. And so some people may want to connect, some may not want to collaborate, but that was difficult for me to understand from teachers that worked with me because I felt like they knew that what I had to give was going to be awesome, mm-hmm. you know? And that's a message that I would tell any teacher. Sometimes, you know, you know what you're doing is awesome and you know what you're doing is great. And sometimes people just may look way beyond that. And don't take that as a, you know, like a downfall or give up. Actually embrace that and know that someone else out there is going to love whatever it is that you're creating.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think what you've done is you've taken that, you know, that, you know, you had something to share, right? Somebody might've told you when you were just starting out, well, this is great. And I think I like to use it. And a lot of people maybe just really don't think what they have created maybe should go beyond the classroom, right? Or that they, you know, they want to keep it to themselves. Like you're saying, a lot of people don't want to connect. And that, you know, that made me think of during the, when we first went to the pandemic emergency teaching, right? That a lot of the teachers were set in their ways, right? And they didn't really branch out ever for the past several years. And those were probably the hardest, those who had it hardest in using different resources, right? Because everybody was having to rely on things that others were sharing at that time. So I think, you know, being willing to share your materials, being willing to collaborate with others, and also having the faith that what you've created is something that not only your students will benefit from, but, you know, other teachers' students will be able to use and, you know, they can tweak it to serve their students best. But, you know, that's kind of what we all do in education. We're all taking a little bit of ideas from everybody. And you're like I am, you know, just attending all those chats and those conferences and finding out what best works for us. And I think Twitter is a great place to, you know, connect with others. Like you said, you're getting all these tech connections, you're getting people to help you out for your workshops. So, you know, you've taken it and you've run with it.
Thank you.
So you talked a little bit also in, you know, for anybody who wants to maybe start a sort of a nonprofit, you said for the planning part, it was pretty easy because you had somebody who was able to help you with the budget, budgeting your site, mm-hmm. the finance and the marketing. But then what was hard for you was deciding what to release, maybe deciding how to structure your site. So what advice would you give to somebody who's wanting to maybe put some of their materials out there or, you know, getting started, you know, being an edupreneur mm-hmm. in this day and age where there's so much, you know, that people can share and that might have something to add to the bunch.
So what I would say is, you know, take yourself out of the equation for a bit mm-hmm. and look at your material as if you're on the outside looking in. So when I first began, I had difficulty deciding not only what would I put up, but how much of it I should put up.
Okay.
And you know, like you said, like we're so used to creating our own stuff, but also going to different workshops. And so by the time you finish sitting down and you're really creating, you're like, oh, this is the best. Mm-hmm. And then the reality check is it may, what works for you may not work for everyone else. Mm-hmm. And so I had to sit there and sift through not only what I had created, but also calm and tame my brain down, because I was already trying to create other things before things were even put on a website. So what I would say is look at whatever you've created and ask yourself, would this work in any classroom setting? Mm-hmm. And so when I try to design activities, the first thing I ask myself is, Yuritsa, would this work in math or would this work in science? How would you, you know, how would you answer this question for a physical education teacher? Would you tell her, hey, this is just history? Or do you say, okay, well, instead of just focusing on the Greeks, maybe you should focus on the Greek Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. And so just trying to tie things in with different subject areas, because at the end of the day, you want to create resources that can benefit everyone. And even if it's content-based, look at the structure of your resources, right? Because a teacher may not take your lesson plan, but they may look at how you structured it and realize, oh, this works because it leads to the next step. And so they may not need your content. They could just use the structure that you've created. So just, you know, ask yourself that. And that's, I still do that to this day. I create things. I wake up in the middle of the night sometimes. I create activities. I put it up in Flipgrid Disco Library. And then tomorrow I'm like, oh, I got to change that line because that line wouldn't work in math. Mm-hmm. You know, so everything is a reflective process. And like I said, I'm not perfect. And I never want to see myself as being perfect because I still want to remain humble. And I know I'm going to make mistakes. And so I don't want other people thinking I don't make mistakes, because I definitely do.
Yeah, and we're constantly learning and, you know, becoming better at it. And I think also having yourself out there and getting feedback, right? Whether it's through these YouTube videos, Twitter chats, or just, you know, people that are writing into your website and commenting, you know, maybe not everybody is as comfortable giving feedback, but it also helps you when you're working with clients and, you know, seeing how they're using some of the materials that helps you tweak things, you know, so you can serve the next client even better.
Oh, for sure. And even, you know, in our free Google Classroom. So I believe we have 94 teachers from across the world already in our free Google Classroom. Mm-hmm. And the number goes up every day. And I have teachers who send me messages through the Google Classroom about different activities. And I love it because now I'm able to say, okay, Yuritsa, well, if you have to really explain this down to a T, then maybe you should just make some changes. You know, if it's not self-explanatory, you have to make some changes. And so even if the stuff that I have up there now, I'm waiting for a question because that question makes me revisit whatever I've already posted, right? Mm-hmm. And so constantly revising, that's great. That's a great part of growth. Mm-hmm. It's how we continue to learn, but it's also what we expect from our students. Mm-hmm. When our students give us the first draft, do you just accept it and say, great, I read your first sentence. This is awesome. Or do you do like I do? I take it home, I sip my coffee, and I go, the first line was good, but I tell you, after that, he lost me. So let me take my pink or green pen, because I don't use red, and let me, you know, write him some comments and put some smiley faces, even though I'm asking some questions. And then that's another thing. I don't put comments, I put questions. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like comments steers kids away. Yeah. And it makes them feel like they did something wrong. But if I ask you a question like, why did you say this person assassinated this person? Are you sure about that? Mm-hmm. It allows them to then go back. And if they are correct or incorrect, they'll make the change and just be like, oh, my bad, Miss V. You know what I meant. No, I didn't know what you meant, but thank you for going back. You know, so that's even another thing, just learning how the reflective process is, learning how revision is. It takes us all time to revise. I've been to college, I didn't had so many, well, two master's degrees, and I'm still learning to revise.
Yeah, no, that's so important to look at student work that way. Instead of writing comments, ask those questions, because we don't always know, you know, what they were thinking. You know, is this a P or a B even, right? Or is this a comma or a semicolon? even stripped down to those small things that maybe we can't tell from their writing, or, you know, just how they worded things. As I've taught English, you know, I know that a lot. And, you know, just the use of grammar and, you know, what did they really mean in this sentence?
Right.
So, out of everything we talked about today on the podcast, what's one thing in particular you'd like listeners to remember?
As educators, we're constantly learning.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's just, that's the most important aspect of teaching. I feel like, you know, when the program didn't take my idea, mm-hmm. yes, it hurt my feelings. Yes, it let me down. But then I realized, okay, Yaritza, so what are you going to do about it? Are you going to continue to have, you know, people say no to you after, you know, you've created such brilliant, because of course I'm boosting myself up, brilliant work? Or are you going to take it and make sure that it reaches the masses? Are you going to continue to share?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what got me here now, sharing. You know, the idea of, okay, I tried to hand you something in your hand, you didn't take it, you didn't want a partnership, you just wanted to have it for yourself, mm-hmm. and now I'm giving it to the world for free. So just, you know, keep learning. Don't doubt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, give yourself an explanation as to why you're doubting it. Just don't say, let's not do it. You know, you owe yourself an explanation just as much as you owe anyone else, well, in education, an explanation for why you make some decisions, especially with curricula and seating now, because that's like the big thing, right? Seating and using certain anti-disinfectant. So just, you know, we're constantly growing. Reflect, revise. Be honest with yourself, be authentic with yourself, and most importantly, just be transparent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are great words to live by. Where can people find you online and connect with you?
So my Twitter is at INC_YV. Also, if you use the hashtag AskYaritza, you can definitely find me as well. You can find me on Flipgrid as one of the inspiring educators. My email is yvresources@gmail.com. And also you can ask me any questions on yveducationalresources.com as well.
Okay. Well, it's been so great to talk to you today about, everything that you're doing to help other educators out and, the work that you're doing and connecting people with those tech resources. It's been a pleasure having you on the Out of the Trenches podcast today.
Oh, thank you so much. This was awesome.